Scotland talking for a Sunday morning. First this hour, we're asking the question, is Scotland's police service at breaking point? That's over the centralisation of its 999 call handling centres. Now, in a bid to save money, Police Scotland's been shutting local control rooms across the country and replacing them with three facilities in the Central Belt.
We get 3 million calls a year. About 1.6 million of those we need to send police officers. The call is transferred to one of our three area control rooms. Govan covers the west of the country, Dundee covers the north, and we've got Bilston Glen in Edinburgh, which covers the east.
On the show shortly, Assistant Chief Constable John Hawkins will be hearing your concerns. If you want to give us a call, if you've had an experience, then the number, of course, is 0333 2020 401. But first, I'm joined by a reporter in the North East, Phil McDonald, who's investigated these changes. Morning, Phil. What have you found out?
A lot, actually, Ali. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's not every Sunday that we have whistleblowers on Scotland's Talkin', and we'll be hearing from them shortly.
The closure of the control room, morale levels were extremely low, and it was getting dangerous.
People going home, you know, just exhausted and feeling absolutely depleted of any energy or morale.
It's worth mentioning first, though, that there are rising concerns about control room closures. Firstly, because of the potential lack of local knowledge that co-handlers hundreds of miles away may have, and a huge reliance on IT software to help their geography skills. And then remember the public outcry over the fatal crash a couple of years ago on the M9 that led to the deaths of mother of two Lamara Bell and boyfriend John Yule. Even though the police were telephoned about that incident, it was 3 days before officers turned up because of failings in the force's co-handling. But it's not just the public who have been worried about centralisation plans. Whistleblowers, whose real identities we've disguised using actors, have come forward to lift the lid on the situations that they've experienced, including this former Aberdeen control worker.
I left because I couldn't deal with it anymore. All the hassle it was causing, the closure of the control room, the staffing levels were extremely low. There was one time, for example, we had three major incidents on the go and we were about 50% capacity in the control room and the stress levels were horrendous.
And those claims were also followed by others claiming the force has lost personnel who've quit after being stretched to their limits by police bosses.
They were very ambitious with their control room closures, trying to do them too quickly before the systems were up to speed. They weren't realistic with their timeframes. They weren't realistic with the staffing profiles they needed. They weren't realistic with, you know, the closure dates and the periods of transition, and I think that's probably where you had the issues early on. I think that's why Aberdeen's date was delayed two or three times, because of the I-6 review and the unfortunate tragedy on the M9, and then latterly in the Inverness control room will probably be the best managed transition, I would say, because they've learned quite a few lessons from, some would say, errors earlier on.
So Inverness are still waiting to hear when they'll lose their control room. But Phil, about your North East Police insider there, did the whistleblower give you any examples of when things have gone really wrong?
Yes, he did. And you might not believe this, but in April, the police were called to a potential break-in at the Tesco on Aberdeen's Great Western Road. But officers were mistakenly sent to the Tesco in Glasgow with the same street name. And the cops only turned up in the right place around 3 hours later. Now, this is what a senior Police Scotland official had to say about suggestions that the loss of local call handlers is failing the new system.
99.99% of the calls have been handled entirely appropriately. The Great Western Road was a notable incident, yes. And in truth, that's down to individual human error. We've examined it, but it gives us an opportunity to explain to our staff the importance of being really clear about locations. We want our staff to get all the information they possibly can to reduce any uncertainty at all about a location. So we encourage our staff to ask those questions and to ask additional questions. Sometimes that can be perceived as a lack of local knowledge.
Assistant Chief Constable Hawkins will be live on the programme in a moment, but my question to you, Phil, is what does the Scottish Government think about all of this?
Well, certainly right to ask that question. The Scottish Government are in charge of policing. It's a power devolved to Holyrood. But when I asked the Scottish Government for an interview, I didn't get one, but instead was sent a written statement. It said that this is a matter for Police Scotland and the Scottish Police Authority. So I asked Ian White from the SPA about what's happened across Scotland since the so-called rushed and stressful closure of Aberdeen's control centre.
The closure will have relieved some of the difficulties with staff workload in the run-up to the change. Basically, it was difficult for a while for Police Scotland to recruit in Aberdeen when people knew that the call centre might be closing. And while that may have created some difficulties in the short term, the move has ensured that there is now a robust system in place with a much larger staffing pool elsewhere in the country. Those particular concerns about stress in the Aberdeen call centre, if they're going back some months, are obviously no longer an issue because of the changes that have been made. Both Glasgow, Dundee and to some extent the Edinburgh call centre have all been staffed up with additional staffing to cope with the workload that has moved over to them. And more importantly, as for the initial call handling, they work as a combined centre so that if there is a high demand on one of them, the others can step in and take some of the stress away and some of the extra workload away.
Speaking of the stress there, Phil, whistleblowers are claiming that what they've been suffering because of these control room closures, but is that something that's been widespread?
Well, that's difficult to say for sure, because when I asked our police force, it did not reveal how many officers have taken off time over work stress. We were told that to answer our question, Police Scotland would have to go through every member of staff's personnel file to gather the information. Very interesting then that the constabulary did not appear to be tracking their employees' welfare.
Records should be kept, and that's something I'm sure my colleagues on the Human Resources Committee will be probing as matters go forward, because they're looking in some detail into staff welfare in the organisation.
That was Ian White again from the Scottish Police Authority. Scotland's Talking were given some data which tells us that a third party provides employee assistance for Police Scotland, and for 2016-70, AXA PPP handled 955 cases. That was for nearly 1,500 issues, including counselling for stress. Have a listen to what Andrea McDonald has to say about mental health issues. She's from the Scottish Police Federation, which represents police officers.
They're reluctant to admit that they have a problem because it's seen as a weakness. If officers are scared to say that they're having these problems, then it can't be addressed, you know, so you have that situation. How can you address something if you don't know that it's happening, if they don't flag this up? And what they tend to do is take annual leave rather than go off sick because they don't want to flag it up. And really we have to start being aware of exactly what's happening and the pressure that they're under.
We can ask the senior police officer in a few moments shortly what he thinks about that. Phil, have you found any evidence that the new centralised system is working well for some areas?
Yes, and the police are very keen for the public to know that they're actually having to wait a lot less for their calls to be picked up. And according to ACC Hawkins, the situation's improved dramatically in the Dundee area.
What we saw beforehand was members of the public waiting in local queues for their call to be answered locally. Now we have a position in which their calls are being diverted to the first available call handler. And that's really improved the situation around discontinued calls. Before we closed our service centre and control room in Dundee, 15% of calls were being discontinued by a member of the public before they were answered. We're now at a position across the country where it's less than 2%. We get 3 million calls a year across the Police Scotland Service Centre, and about 1.6 million of those we need to send police officers.
Well, if you're in Dundee and you've given up on waiting for the police, give us a call. And if you're elsewhere in Scotland, have you dialled 999 for the police? What was your experience? Our number is 0333 2020 401. Phil, you've spent a lot of time onto this. Anything else you want to add?
I've seen the results of a Twitter poll carried out by our news team in the north, and it's found that 8 in 10 people do not actually trust that they'll get the help they need from Central Belt call handlers.
Right, that's interesting. Phil, if you can hang on there for a moment, please, because I'd like to bring on Assistant Chief Constable John Hawkins to the programme. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. And you have heard some of the reports there. What's your initial thoughts to that?
Good morning. And
good morning.
Thanks for the opportunity to speak to your listeners. I think one key issue that your report hasn't covered, and you've covered very many things indeed, is the reason why we needed to make this change. And I think it's important that I perhaps address that issue first. This wasn't a cost-cutting exercise. We changed our call handling arrangements quite simply because they weren't fit for purpose. When Police Scotland came into being, we had 10 different service centres and 10 different area control rooms around the country. They'd been set up to deal with the 8-force model that was in place beforehand. They had different ICT, computer technology systems, and in many, many cases there had been a real underinvestment in those critical systems. Each of those facilities could only see and deploy officers in their immediate area. So if there was an officer nearby but over the old force boundary, the control room couldn't see that officer, and as a result that officer wasn't dispatched to help a member of public in their moment of need. And we saw real variable performance in relation to the service that was provided to the public, the speed with which we answered 999 and 101 calls, and that simply wasn't good enough. As your report highlighted, members of the public were having to wait in local queues. There was no interconnectivity between our sites, and there was inadequate resilience. So we were unable to deal with multi-location incidents. So in many ways, your report has highlighted many of the deficiencies of the old system, and it's also highlighted many of the challenges associated with a large-scale change programme like this. And I'm more than happy to address each of those as we go through the next few minutes. But it is important to say that we absolutely needed to make these changes, and it's wrong to suggest it was a cost-cutting exercise.
So you've been given more money to do these things then, to make these changes?
We have. Within our police budget, C3, our call handling arrangements, has seen an increase in funding.
But you can understand why people get upset at losing local control, can't you?
Well, I can understand when people get upset when they don't achieve an appropriate service. We're in Police Scotland, nothing's more important to us than providing the most appropriate service we can to the public. And as I say, that's quite simply why we had to make these changes. I understand the issue around local knowledge, which came up in the poll that Phil referred to. And I think that's not a new issue, and I don't think it's a unique issue. I think every part of Scotland could make a strong case for the need for local knowledge. And we have, as the report said earlier, taken a number of steps to ensure that our staff have the knowledge necessary to get officers to a member of the public in their moment of need. And it's important to say that members of the public will still contact us by 999 and by 101, and it will still be local officers that will attend and help them. But as your report said, we have ICT systems which help our staff, and I'm more than happy to give you some more information about that. That ensures that officers will be dispatched and will be able to attend and to help members of the public in their moment of need.
OK, let's go to a caller from Inverness. David's there. David, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning, David. You have a point you would like to make to the Assistant Chief Constable.
It's all to do with local knowledge, and I've been involved in three different incidents where the call centre had an issue. The first was on the south bank of the Caledonian Canal in Inverness between Newton Top Lock and Tom the Hurid Bridge, and the operator said, "What's the postcode?" Well, I didn't realise canal banking actually had a postcode. And the woman said, "Well, you know, I need to know because she was in Motherwell." And, you know, if it was an Inverness call centre, they would have known exactly where I was talking about.
Mm. There's actually another text come in on the same thing, saying that they came across a road accident, and the first thing they were asked for when they phoned the police was the postcode. And they said, "How the heck am I supposed to know what the postcode is in a particular road?" Is that a general question?
That was going to be my next one, because I witnessed an accident on the Harrigan roundabout. Now, Everybody in the north of Scotland knows where the Harrigan roundabout is, and I would assume an operator would have done, and they said, you know, where's the Harrigan roundabout? Well, everybody knows it's on the A96 at the end of the North Anderson Drive in Aberdeen. The call handler didn't know that and asked me, what's the postcode?
OK, let the Assistant Chief come in on that one. Is that a general opening question then? What is the postcode? Are we all supposed to know these things?
Well, our service advisors and call handlers are really well trained and they're very professional. I never fail to be impressed with them, with their determination to get police officers to members of the public in their moment of need. Part of that training requires them to be as thorough as they can in obtaining information about particular locations. So we encourage them to ask questions. We find that by taking a little bit longer at the outset to establish critical information about location helps us to get officers there quickly. So in many ways it's good call handling for our staff to really ensure that they extract as much information as possible. Now, undoubtedly, a postcode, if the person does know the postcode, is a very good way of identifying exactly where they are very quickly. But it's not the only question they ask. It's one of a range of questions and techniques they use to make sure that we can get officers to the member of the public as soon as we possibly can.
This is Scotland's Talkin'. Call 0333 20 20 401.
Scotland's Talkin'. Let's go back on the phone lines then. And Andrew's here. Andrew, good morning to you.
Good morning, Ali. Good morning, Assistant Chief Constable Hawkins.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Yeah, fine, thanks. I think, in fairness, Ali, to the Assistant Chief there, that, you know, the police, like so many public services, under a huge amount of pressure, Ali, and they're having to maybe take on archaic systems, for instance, as you know, Mr. Hawkins alluded to there. They take on 10 different areas, and you've got to try and make, you know, new technology, sort of new centres, and train new staff. So, given he's answered 99.9% of his calls correctly, I can't see where the criticism lies, really, Ali, in fairness to the Police Scotland people. And, you know, the stress thing, well, I suppose no firm can carry passengers these days, Ali. I do agree there's probably not enough staff, and you'll never have enough staff when you have holidays, sickness, etc., etc. And that comes back to the old problem, do we pay enough tax in this country, Ali?
Go on, you go.
Yeah, I would have thought, you know, why, oh, why does our First Minister, you know, persist in these vanity projects of blooming independence instead of getting on with the blooming job? As I've said 100 times in hand, she's got tax-raising powers. Put a penny onto tax for a start and use the money to help maybe relieve some of the problem areas where they're losing staff, or staff are going off sick, or, you know, we're paying locum doctors $100,000 a time to come over here. There's got to be a better way of doing things in our public services, Ali.
Well, Andrew, I wouldn't expect the Assistant Chief Constable to get into the political arena. That's the last place he wants to go this morning. But, John Hawkins, do you accept that there are problems with stress levels in control rooms, and indeed with the police in general?
Stress and the well-being of our staff is a really important issue to us. I mean, as I've said before, there's nothing more important than the service we provide to the public, and we recognise we've got to have a motivated and a healthy workforce if we're going to do that. And I think we do have that workforce that provides that excellent service to the public. I think in many ways the changes that we've made in C3 have addressed some of the issues. So we've increased the number of staff we've got in our control rooms around the country. We've improved our ICT immeasurably so that we've got quicker systems. And we've introduced the notable incident process, which your piece at the start of the show detailed, whereby our staff are encouraged to let us know where any incident could have been dealt with better. So we make real efforts to improve and to learn as we go. So it's important that we really understand the levels of sickness within C3, and we do that. So we have just over 1,800 people in our contact command and control division, and 1.7% of those are currently absent, citing stress or anxiety or depression. And of course, that can be for a whole range of issues. It may be work-related, it may not be. It's very much an individual set of circumstances. circumstances in each and every case. So we recognise it's an important issue. We understand how important it is, not least because it leads directly to the service we provide to the public. And we're taking steps to ensure that we do everything we can to support our staff. So we've really reinvigorated our approach to health and well-being. We produce a monthly newsletter giving our staff some tips and advice. Between April and September, we ran an initiative which saw free health screenings, some mortgage and pension advice, and various clinics around adopting a healthy lifestyle. So this is a very real issue for us within Contact Command and Control, or C3, but it's also a really big issue for the force. The force has, in recent months, introduced a health and well-being approach chaired by the Deputy Chief Constable, and that's ensuring that right across the force we identify areas of good practice and we share those across. So it is a real issue. It's an important issue because it goes right to service delivery, and we recognise it that it is such an important issue.
Okay, let's go back to Phil McDonald to put the report together. Phil, what you've been hearing the Assistant Chief Constable say there, has that given you some answers to some of your questions?
I think it certainly gives some reassurances, but at the end of the day, you know, this is a system that people don't have faith in because they would prefer local knowledge. And he said our investigation outlined problems in the old system, but I think the issue is that, you know, these incidents are still happening and officers don't feel that they have the support network there that they once did, and they don't feel they can radio the control room that they relied on so heavily, and that they don't have that same confidence in the new model.
Okay. Also with you, I believe, we've got Jeff Dyack, who's a former police officer who is now a presenter, a colleague of ours. Jeff, why did you leave the police force?
For the same reason that I think many, many, many of my former colleagues did, that it's not the job it once was.
In what way?
Changes to pensions. Well, let's not get political about this. We're here to chat about the controlled enclosures and so on. What I'd like to ask the Assistant Chief Constable when we're here this morning is, there have been clips of him on our news all week, and I've had a number of messages from former colleagues, people who are still in the service, including this. I'd like to read this message and ask the Assistant Chief Constable for his reply or for his comment. You need to stop playing that Police Scotland clip. That boss is a liar. It's better my backside. It's shocking. We're working to half minimum staffing levels on night shifts. The control room has no idea where we are. We were sent to the same incident 6 times because it was raised as different locations and none of them had a clue what was going on.
Well, I mean, let me sort of talk a little bit about our performance. And as I've said already, answering the 999 calls and the 101 calls is hugely important to us. We need to get that right, and we need to get officers to members of the public in their moment of need. And we set ourselves really challenging targets. So we seek to answer 90% of 999 calls within 10 seconds and 90% of 101 calls within 40 seconds. Speed matters in these occasions. And what we've seen is a marked increase in our performance since we've made these changes. So before we transitioned business from Aberdeen, 73% of 101 calls were answered, not the 90%. In Dundee, it was 68% of our 101 calls were answered within 40 seconds. And recently in Inverness, the figure has been about 81%. That's important and it matters to us. We've also reduced the number of calls that have been discontinued by the caller before they've spoken to a member of our staff. So it's currently less than 2% of these calls being discontinued. Before we closed Aberdeen, it was at 8%. In Dundee, as your clip said at the outset, it was 15%. And recently we've seen 15% of calls in Inverness being discontinued by the member of the public before speaking to our service advisor. And that's not good enough. And we need to make changes. And that's exactly what we're doing. And I should say, you might expect me to say that, but these improvements have been recognised by Her Majesty's Inspector of Constabulary. And they've also been recognised by the public through the very high levels of public satisfaction that are reported in our user satisfaction survey. The last time we ran it, 94.3% of those surveys stated they were very satisfied or satisfied with the service we received, they received at the first point of contact. Now, we will always continue to try and improve, and we've learned that organisational change is difficult, and we're learning the lessons, all the lessons we can as we go, but we are undoubtedly providing an enhanced level of service to communities across Scotland.
Something, obviously, Jeff, that you wouldn't agree with. They are providing an enhanced service.
Absolutely not. It's all very well and good to say that the performance is good in terms of calls being answered in time. Okay, yes, fine, 999 calls are being answered within 10 seconds. That's fine. But does the person answering the call actually know what they're talking about? Or the locations that are being referred to? And I think not. That message from a still-serving officer says the control room sent them to the same incident 6 times because they didn't know which stretch of road the accident had taken place on. So fine, the call's answered in time, but does the person answering the call actually know what they're talking about? No. The caller you had on from Inverness earlier on, Ali, was talking about the Hadigan roundabout. Everyone knows where that is. Now, it's fine saying our staff are trained to obtain as much information as possible. The Hadigan roundabout is a bit of a no-brainer.
Well, it is. It's a no-brainer if you're based in the northeast, but if you're based somewhere else, then I can understand, you know, that somebody may not know where it is. And that is still a problem, Assistant Chief Constable, that you're having, isn't it? That is the local knowledge situation.
I mean, I've spoken a little bit about local knowledge already, but I'm more than happy to pick that up again. I would talk really around the ICT systems that we've put in place to support our staff. We have got a system called the Gazetteer, which is an electronic location-based system, which is uploaded by Police Scotland from each local authority. So it's local information provided by the local authority. And it provides us and our staff with comprehensive details of house numbers, of house names, of streets and roads. And it includes local known-as names or alias names or colloquial names. And it also includes details of landmarks right across the country, including schools, hospitals, even mountain ranges and arterial routes. That allows, and I should say too, that system is constantly updated and new information is added to it, so that when a call does come in, not only do our service advisors have the benefit of that, it's an improving system which is kept up to date, and they have an opportunity to keep it up to date. So that's one of the many ways in which we ensure that we have got sufficient knowledge. Another is the questioning approach that I referred to earlier, where we train our staff and we ask our staff. And I do take some issue with the sort of negative assertions about the competence of our staff. As I've said already, they are absolutely outstanding and second to none in terms of the efforts they provide, often dealing with difficult situations, because I think what's important to acknowledge is you cannot eliminate risk completely in a police call handling environment. It would be incorrect of me to say that that's the case, and I think it would be naive for anybody to think anything otherwise. Our members of staff deal with people in distress each and every hour of each and every day, often with incorrect information or imprecise information, often with members of public who don't actually know where they are. And they deal with that incredibly well. And the systems and the changes that we've put in place ensure that we'll continue to improve. Because as I've said, there's nothing more important than the service we provide to the public.
Let's squeeze in John Bissett. John, make your point, please.
A very good morning, Ali. Very good morning, Assistant Chief Constable.
Good morning.
Very good morning, sir. I fell down in Discovery Dundee 3 weeks ago, broke my hip. 2 police officers were there and attending right away. Rushed me to Ninewells Hospital. Fantastic. Call handlers, I've spoken to quite a few. And nothing but praise for all the force, police officers, call handlers in Scotland. Let's give this money tree a big shake and give everyone a big pay rise, please.
John, thank you very much indeed. Joseph in Glasgow, hang on, I'll be with you in a second.
You could be next on Scotland's Talkin'. Call 0333 20 20 401.
Taking your calls at the moment is Assistant Chief Constable John Hawkins. We're talking about centralisation of control rooms. Joseph's in Glasgow. Joseph, good morning to you.
Good morning, Ali.
Good morning. What's your point?
Well, I'm in my local police station. It's only just round the corner from the alley, a minute from my house, on the other side of the building. And these people kicked the front door in, and then they were, you call, using the drugs and making a mess, you know. So I could see them down from where I was standing, from up the stair. And then I went out the other door, see, the fire door, and I went over to the police station and asked him for me. He said, we don't send police constables out of this sort of the police station. It's a high security police station. You need phone 101 to get a constable off the street or a police car off the street. I said, are you kidding me on? He said, no, this is high security for me, you know. So anyway, Ali, when I phoned 101, I couldn't believe it when the person said, where are you phoning from? I says, same enough phone, you from Glasgow? She says, no, this call centre's not in Glasgow. I couldn't believe it, Ali. You know, are these the kind of things you're saying? Well, Glasgow's a big city. Why haven't we got a call centre in Glasgow?
But was, you know, coming back to it, was your query dealt with efficiently?
No, it didn't even come, Ali. It did not come. I can't understand it. Well, so these people, down the ladder, it's not a priority, you know, Ali. You know what I mean? You leave it up to the housing, the thing, or your concierge to come in and clean up the mess, you know what I mean? When these people are doing that and getting walking away scot-free, you know what I mean?
John Hawkins, do the public expect too much from the police?
Oh no, I'm sorry to hear that was Joseph's experience, and if Joseph would be willing to, I'd be keen to perhaps get some more details about that at the end of the show, and we can have a look into the circumstances there. No, I think that the public rightly have high expectations of policing. I think that's right and appropriate, and as I hope I've tried to get across over the course of the morning, there's nothing more important to us than meeting those expectations, and that's what the men and women of Police Scotland are determined to do.
I still go back to, though, do you know that Joseph phoning in there for something like that. Joseph, do you really think it was a police matter?
Well, Ali, concerning little kids coming up into the block, a house and seeing all that paper and all that stuff lying there, they don't love it. They leave it, like, you know. So you've got to phone the concierge to make the mess. But the point is, you want the policeman to get them off the street and dealt with, like, you know, because that's a crime. As far as I'm concerned, that's a crime. It shouldn't be doing in the street or in a public highway or a public entrance. You know what I mean?
Right. I mean, that's not the first time, I have to say, John, that callers have come onto the programme talking about police. Obviously, I can understand grading calls as to their urgency, etc. And one a few weeks ago was a lady whose mother had been burgled, an elderly lady, and it took 3 days for the police to arrive. I mean, are we so short of police officers now?
No, I think what we're seeing is a real changing nature of demand placed upon Police Scotland. So we receive over 3 million calls a year from the public. And what we now understand is that it's only around 15 or 16% of those calls actually relate to crime. Overwhelmingly, what we're dealing with are issues of vulnerability, and a big part of that is mental health. That can be substance abuse, but vulnerability is really the key demand that's placed upon us. So that traditional demand has changed, and I think we've responded really quickly to that. So we have introduced additional training for our call handlers, so that they now assess the threat, the risk, and the harm around vulnerability when they're determined and what the appropriate response is. And we've also introduced mental health and suicide prevention training to all of our police officers. So that's our response in the immediate to deal with this issue. And of course, this features largely in our 10-year strategy, the way in which we're going to change policing over the next 10 years to ensure that we remain absolutely dealing with the issues that the public want us to do. So I think what you're seeing is a greater focus around vulnerability. Those who need our help from us, those who need us to be closely engaging and working with other partner agencies in order to ensure appropriate outcomes.
Right. Thank you very much indeed to Joseph then in Glasgow. Catherine's been on as well. She would like to ask you about the, unfortunately she couldn't hang on, have I got this right, you mentioned it, the Electronic Gazetteer. Is that the correct name for it?
That's right. That's the name of the system we have.
Yeah, right. She asks, what happens when that fails? when that system goes down, you know, and that is not there for the call centre handlers, they don't have local knowledge, what backup is in place?
Well, indeed, that was one of the reasons why we needed to make the changes we did, because our individual sites, I talked about the 10 service centre and the 10 area control rooms, they didn't have the kind of resilience to cope if an issue did happen. People in that particular area would then see a lack of service or a fallback to business continuity arrangements. We know, because we have the Police Scotland Service Centre, your call will be answered by the first available service advisor in Motherwell, in Bilston or in Govan. So we have the system taking place and being available to our staff right across the country. So if we have a particular issue, we've now got much greater resilience to deal with that in one of our other locations. We can move calls around.
And is your new or updated computer system up to the job? Have you got there yet with it?
So we've invested significant amounts of money in relation to ICT improvements. Really, ICT is really important in a call handling environment, as I'm sure you'll appreciate. Mm-hmm. We've invested significantly, and now we have a more stable network. We've updated applications, and it's now quicker for our service advisors too. So it's a more stable and a quicker system, and we'll continue to invest in it as we do, because I'm sure you and our listeners will appreciate computer systems tend to go out of date kind of quickly, it seems, these days. So it's not a once and forever fix. We'll continue to monitor and ensure that we invest where we have to ensure we have the right systems to allow us to protect the public.
Great. John Hawkins, Assistant Chief Constable for Police Scotland, thank you very much indeed for joining us and answering some of the questions that have been put to you today. Thank you very much indeed.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.